And for the third time, it's called In the Still of the Night from the Five Satins, one of the songs that Greil Marcus has selected for his new book, The History of Rock and Roll in 10 Songs. Jim Carroll has been reading the book for us and is with me now in studio. Tell us about the author of this book, first of all. Who is he?
He's basically a writer who commands a great deal of respect. His rock and roll writings done. I mean, he's the guy who kind of puts the fear of God into ordinary, decent music journalists like myself. He's someone who's kind of, he's written the canon, you know. He's written for every publication that matters. He's written some of the best books on music you can imagine. Two books in particular, I suppose, stand out. One is Lipstick Traces, which was published in 1989. That took punk rock as a starting point, and it just kind of went into the ether. You know, it just went back in time, forward in time, and it was a great, brilliant, confusing ball of a read. And then the other book he would have written that people know him for was 1975's book, The Mystery Train. And there used to be a radio show on this very station which took his name from that book. And that basically took its starting point as Elvis, and it just kind of delved into American culture. When Greil Marcus turns his attention to a topic, he goes wide and he goes deep.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering, why does he put the fear of God into journalists like yourself, and what is his style that makes him so in demand?
I suppose the style is quite learned. I mean, a lot of people find him quite complex and quite dense, but like, you know, he really writes about a feeling. I think he's one of the few, I suppose, academic music writers who can actually get the feeling of what great rock and roll is all about. And he's incredible. He's very erudite. His writing is very, as I say, very, very dense and very complex. And he makes these very unusual connections. You know, he's the kind of person who kind of would look at a song, but like in this book as well, there's several cases that we'll come to where he takes a song and he'll discover the most esoteric material around it. He'll make connections that probably people involved wouldn't even make. He'll make connections maybe that people might have to be stoned normally to make.
Yeah, because when you see a title like The History of Rock and Roll in 10 Songs, it sounds like the most prosaic book in the world, and it sounds like a very almost lazy title. What is he doing by even naming it in that fashion?
I think he's been cheeky and disingenuous, I suppose. I mean, the original plan behind the book was he was approached by a publisher, and the publisher asked him, would you write a book on the history of rock and roll? He thought this was a terrible idea. And what he said was, but then he started thinking, what if the book was non-chronological, discontinuous, and left out almost everyone who couldn't be left out, namely Elvis, Chuck Berry, James Brown, Bob Dylan, the Rolling Stones, Aretha Franklin, the Sex Pistols, Michael Jackson? What if it neglected the
world? And does he leave all... Those did not appear in the book.
This is where I'm talking about being disingenuous. He said, well, let's leave out all the great moments, the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, Bob Dylan going lecturing. Instead, concentrate on a small number of songs, each of which in his own unique way embodied rock and roll. That interests him, and that's the idea that became this book. Now, he's been disingenuous because he says he left out the Beatles. He didn't leave out the Beatles. The Beatles appear here. He said he left out the Rolling Stones. He didn't. The Rolling Stones appear, but they are not the focus. The focus are the 10 songs.
So he takes the 10 songs, and maybe the big names appear, but within the story of that song and its effects, rather than here's the Beatles and here's all the effects that they had.
Exactly. Right. The 10 songs are like, they're an esoteric bunch. I mean, like you played there the kind of doo-wop song. There's also kind of like a guy called Christian Markley and a video installation called Guitar Drag. There's To Know Him Is to Love Him, originally by Phil Spector with the Teddy Bears. There's the Flaming Groovies, 1970s mid-1970s retro garage anthem, Shake Some Action. And then there's songs that we know, like, say, Joy Division and Transmission.
And what about Barrett Strong? What does he represent?
Barrett Strong recommends... basically, I would say
What I'm wanting you to say. Sorry, I should have been clearer.
Okay. So I suppose what he represents is, he represents, I suppose, a certain kind of spirit that he saw in rock and roll. He also saw, I suppose, in Money, a song that was later covered by lots of different bands, and basically became a bit of an anthem, became a bit of a standard.
Money certainly would be a very identifiable song. Is that not a big song, or how does he use that to spark him off into another discussion?
It is a big song because, I mean, it became a standard, like we said. I mean, it became a song that the Beatles covered. I'm very sure the Rolling Stones covered as well, though I'm sure there's some listeners who'll correct me on that. And it's a standard. It's a song that every single garage band will play at some stage in their career. The Stripes still play it, for example, the garage teenagers from Cavan. And like, what happens is that he takes the song, he takes Barrett Strong, the original version of Motown, and he just kind of like encapsulates.
It can go anywhere.
It can go anywhere. And this is the whole thing about Marcus. He's one of these writers who has got a great command of English and a great way of pulling you along with the story. Now, you said earlier on that, like, you know, that when you look at the title, History of Rock and Roll in 10 Songs, it sounds quite boring and quite flat. And I think that, like, he's kind of, I suppose, aim is to, I suppose, kind of, like, you know, in many ways tease you in and then kind of throw you into what is it? But it's basically a thriller. It's a Grisham-like thriller, this book.
So the songs that he chooses, are they necessarily then songs that are very important in the history of rock and roll? Are they just songs that suit the chapter he wants to write?
That's a very good point, Sean. It's definitely that case. I mean, like, you know, the thing about the history of rock and roll in 10 songs is that if you grabbed 100 rock and roll fans that all choose 10 different songs, there might be some kind of commonality between them, but like everyone will choose different songs. In the case of Marcus, in some ways he's trying to be quite smart in a way, and there are certain points he wants to make. There are certain songs he chooses for a reason, because he wants to make a point about like socio-political change. He wants to make a point about race. He wants to make a point about like how great he can be in terms of like making these incredible connections and leaps of imagination that no one else could possibly embrace.
What was the point he wanted to make then about with Transmission from Joy Division?
Well, Joy Division is a read. This song this chapter is particularly funny because as I was reading it, I suddenly started taking notes on all these different connections and jumps he made. So the chapter on Joy Division Transmission takes in, if you will, the Beach Boys, the Sex Pistols, the Monkees, the Old Man of the Sea, Saul Bellew, 60s London, and the Cray Twins allegedly blackmailing Brian Epstein. Like, he just makes all these jumps from this particular post-punk song.
So I don't know if I went quite in chronological order in the songs that I played, but certainly in this book that we're talking about, Jim Carroll, The History of Rock and Roll in 10 Songs, Greer Marcus does not obey chronological rules in any way, shape or form, does he?
No, none whatsoever. I mean, it's very subjective. He, like from that quote earlier on, he really wanted to have a non-chronological order. He wants to basically like take the songs where they were going to go and basically just jump all around the place. And what he's trying to do is, it's probably the most playful of his books to date. You know, I mean, that's the criticism that's been thrown at Lipstick Traces or at Mystery Train, that they were very, very dense. This is very playful. You know, it's one of those books that you can actually enjoy the way he's writing and just go along with him.
And, you know, obviously the history of rock and roll, you'll often think about putting it into some sort of social context or political context and how one mirrors the other. Does Marcus get into that sort of thing, or is he solely talking about music?
No, he does. Like, you know, he makes these points and he makes them in a very good way. The song we opened with, In the Still of the Night, that was originally by Fred Parris and the Five Satins, and that's kind of an example of the impact doo-wop would have had on rock and roll. But as Marcus subtly points out, the song was covered by various other groups down the years, including many white vocal groups. And him, it's an example, a white group like the Slades, and for him it's one of many examples of a white group recording and taking the work of black acts and outselling them. So I mean, there's that element too as well.
Who is this book for? Do you already need to know a lot of the history to appreciate what he's doing with it?
I found stories in this that I didn't know. I found kind of like examples, and not just kind of like the Joy Division thing I pointed out there. I think this book is for anyone who won't take the title literally, who's not looking for basically another book about bloody Bob Dylan or the Beatles or the Rolling Stones. Someone as well who knows where Marcus is coming from and someone who wants to kind of go deep.
All right. Why does Amy Winehouse make her way into this book with a song that might surprise people?
Yeah, she makes her way into the book because the song in particular, it's by kind of Phil Spector, and it was covered previously by Dolly Parton, Emmylou Harris, Linda Ronstadt, John Lennon, Mark Boland, Gloria Jones, and Nancy Sinatra. But as far as Marcus is concerned, no one ever did this song justice until Amy Winehouse came along. I think this is kind of a Jose Mourinho moment. He's been kind of like difficult for the sake of being difficult.
The Amy Winehouse version of To Know Him is To Love Him. And before that, we were talking about Greil Marcus's book, The History of Rock and Roll in 10 Songs, which is published by Yale University Press. Jim Carroll was talking to us about that.